It is 2:04 p.m. and you are listening to Radical Minds on WHPK 88.5 FM Chicago, the Pride of the South Side. Radical Minds investigates the interlocking political, economic, and social problems facing modern society for a ruthless critique of everything existing. We are an ongoing conversation of academics, intellectuals, and activists on questions pertinent to the left, past, present, and future. I'm your host, Erin Haygood, and I'm in the studio with two co-hosts today, my usual co-host, Stephanie Gomez, and also Will Stratford of the Platypus Affiliated Society, and we will be interviewing over the phone live on air today, Alex Kritikos. And so we're still waiting for his call, so I'm just going to start us off with some public service announcements. When it comes to their children, parents today are always up to speed on the latest safety issues. But are they focusing on the right issues? Motor vehicle crashes are a leading cause of death for children aged 1 to 13, and that fatality rates could be reduced by about half if the correct car seat was always used. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is in the right car seat for their age and size. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And here, I'm just going to pop one in so I don't have to read this one and stutter all over it.
Young people everywhere are making a difference.
Special Olympics has changed my life so dramatically.
It's helped me a lot to be fearless, you know, in the real world.
My friends I've made through Special Olympics are the best people I've ever met in my life.
I truly realize that what I'm doing is for a great cause.
And it's not about disabilities, but it's about celebrating their abilities.
I've made a difference. Now it's your turn to make a difference.
Get involved at SpecialOlympics.org.
Okay, and it looks like our interviewee's just called in. Stephanie, you want to take it away?
Sure. All right, so if you could just go ahead and introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your experience with advertising.
Oh, sure, yeah. So my name is Alex Kritikos. I know Stephanie from SAIC, where we went to school together. So it's kind of interesting. I guess, like, it's this dual position that I'm occupying, where it's like I went to art school and got really into, you know, like philosophy, critical theory, Marxist economics, that kind of stuff. And now for the past like 3 months since January, have been interning, and now I'm freelancing at a major advertising agency. And it's kind of crazy just like to, I don't know, live on the other side of that after this very, you know, almost naively idealistic art school education. It's very fun, though. But, yeah, I kind of, like, feel like an antichrist sometimes just because of our motivations. I was actually my specific position in advertising strategy. So that's almost, like, the most kind of, like, theoretically rigorous department, because it's like you're trying to, you know, like find out like consumer insights, and they talk about like cultural codes and all this stuff. It could have just been like, you know, ripped from like some essay you'd read in art school, you know.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, I mean, we talked about this earlier this week, like how there's this sort of transfer of ideology and experience into advertising that can be kind of confusing. So I first wanted to talk about how do you think advertising has been changed by social media, like especially Facebook, how it reaches consumers based upon personal preferences reflected by their data, and advertisers and the agencies have to try and target their content according to that business model, you know, strategizing people's interests and like having, you know, like getting sort of like quantitative like insights into like what people are looking for as consumers in ads.
Yeah, totally. So that's an actually very interesting question, especially because when I started, I was a strategist on a tobacco company account. So tobacco companies, I don't know if you know, they're not allowed legally to have social media accounts, which is kind of like interesting to think of in and of itself, you know, compared to like, you know, Jack Daniels can have like social media accounts. And then, like, now my position, so I went from being a strategist on an account with no social media, and now I'm a community manager on a, like, kind of like American food franchise brand. So my entire job is social media. And it's been a really kind of a jarring change, but it's really fun and interesting in a way, kind of like to witness that. I would say there's a couple of, like, just off the top of my head, like, big kind of like high level key changes with social media and advertising. A couple of them would be like, one would be like, so the question of like whether, you know, like the question that was raised in the 2016 election with echo chambers and like, you know, only seeing and getting fed back to us what we already like and enjoy, like that's, I think, a big part of it. And like whether or not it contributes to that, which I think it does. So like where's that headed? Another thing is, and that's like, I would say like a negative change, because, you know, that's like stasis in a feedback loop, like getting fed back to you what you like, contributing to like, you know, insular conversations. But then there's also like interesting positive changes, you know, like we can see like consumers pushing companies, brands in directions of like more altruistic kind of like motivations, you know, like sustainability, like all these stuff, like all these things that, you know, brands are always talking about, and kind of like are able to hold them to account, you know?
What do you mean by hold them to account?
So Starbucks last week, you know, things like that.
Can you explain that example for the listeners?
Yeah, so I'm not sure when it was, either last week or the week before, but two black guys were like at a Starbucks waiting for a friend, and I guess the manager got like suspicious, called the cops. They were arrested really for nothing. Like, it's not clear what they did wrong at all. And like instantly you saw this huge backlash on social media. Boycott Starbucks, you know, delete the Starbucks app off your phone, you know, let's go to like Dunkin' Donuts and cheaper places and local places for coffee. And right after that, you saw Starbucks say, okay, May 29th, we're going to close all of our stores across the U.S. for a couple hours for mandatory like racial sensitivity training or what have you, you know? And of course you can argue that, you know, it's just bullshit, you know, they're just going to like, you know, do this, like, whatever, this, like, fake surface, superficial, you know, like, ethics training, and nothing's going to result from it. But, I mean, that's, like, you know, a step at least.
So how do you think that that specific case has to do necessarily with advertising? I mean, it seems like you were making a connection between, you know, companies and how they engage with the public on social media and, like, how that's allowed the engagement to kind of go both ways in a sense. So, like, I mean, how does this then, you know, have to do with the role of advertising in capitalism?
You know, like, brand perception. Like, advertising isn't just, like, you know, campaigns anymore. Like, oh, let's just do this campaign, launch this product, that's it. It's like, you know, constantly, how are we upkeeping, especially with social media? It's like, how are we upkeeping every day? This is literally my job, like our brand image. Like, how are we putting out, like making sure we're not having any like public relations crises, like boycotts, you know? Like the people who had my job for Starbucks, whoever they were, have probably been like panicking and up for like 3 days, you know? Like.
Right. Well, I guess maybe a broader question I had about that was, so do you think this shift we see in advertising where it engages with people through like their interests and targets people according to like their more specific demographics? I mean, I have tons of examples I want to bring up later, but versus like, you know, earlier like forms of advertising, like where we would see like these campaigns that are meant to like speak more to like the average American than like a specific niche group, because like, you know, you're not like doing this sort of like internet like approach where you're trying to identify with like individuals like more specifically. So like, I guess my question is, do you think that with that shift, advertising takes on a more or less universal character in terms of capitalism?
Well, the thing is, like, I think in that regard, less has changed than a lot of people like to think. You know, advertising has always, and this is, we were talking about this earlier, I know, and that this is an interesting question about, like, what can we call the beginning of advertising, you know, like, when did it start, whether that's, like, you know, like, mating rituals or, like, you know, religions or cults or, like, some caveman being like, join our tribe, you know, it's the best tribe. But I think the advertising has always been targeted to an extent, you know, it's always like, okay, we want to sell, you know, vacuum cleaners. Who uses vacuum cleaners? You know, like women, like what do they want? You know, that was like in the 20s and even like 1800s, people were doing that. And the thing about like data and targeting is, yeah, it's very good at like pushing things out to people. Like we can get very granular and specific with the kind of people we want to see an advertisement, especially over like something like Facebook, you know, where it has all that data, which like that leads to interesting questions in and of itself. But like, honestly, what I've been really surprised with working at like, a really big advertising company is kind of like how like still outdated and kind of like primitive some of the methods are for social media analysis. Like a lot of the times, well, this was actually one time, but like it really stood out to me. I was just like scanning through Twitter bios, looking for, you know, descriptors about people and then kind of like extrapolating recurring themes, you know, it'll still be like a surprising amount of just like shifting manually, you know?
I was wondering maybe if I could jump in with a question kind of related to this idea of targeted advertising and also related to what you brought up earlier, which was kind of the social media bubbles that came up during the election. And I was wondering about, like, you know, to what extent do you think that, like, politics often copies advertising in its approach? And is this a good or a bad thing? Because I think we see it a lot with these, you know, kind of big parties. They really just kind of take, like, the marketing approach to politics and, like, this is how we're going to get voters by appealing to all these really specific interests. And I think there's a question of like, is that something that socialist politics should look at? I mean, should socialists be looking at kind of marketing strategies, or is that something that only works for kind of these, you know, big political parties, and what do we make of it? And I think Stephanie has something to say too, yeah. Real quick.
Just a follow up, like another side of that I was thinking about earlier, actually, like, because I did actually, like, you know, think about that. But, like, the other side of that, which is when advertising, like, takes on the character of, like, existing politics and, like, you know, like, positions or, like, the culture surrounding those positions or whatever. Like, I mean, I was thinking about the Kendall Jenner, like, Pepsi ad that got a lot of, like, backlash with, like, where she, like, stops the protest with, like, her Pepsi, like, by giving it to the cop and, like, everyone's, like, in peace. Yeah, just like kind of this like dialectical, like sort of back and forth of like ideology between like the ads and like the politics that they like try to embody, I guess, or like capitalize on.
No, totally. And I think there's like a hilarious kind of like relationship between not only politics and advertising, but like psychoanalysis. And so like if you look at kind of like the origins of the focus group and those kind of like psychographic techniques in advertising that after they hit advertising were translated into politics. All of those techniques were derived from Freud and psychoanalysis. And there's actually this great documentary, the name's escaping me right now, but it's about Freud
Century
and
of the self.
His nephew, Edward Bernays, who was like a huge American public relations man in the 50s and 60s, whose like techniques were like consequently used by Bill Clinton and politicians. And Aaron, to your question, like whether or not it's good for politics, I think is open to consideration. I would say like our impulsive reaction is to be like, yeah, that politics is now appropriating the strategies of advertising by and large, like not a good sign, because that just means that politics is being like subsumed or subservient kind of like to economic interests, like, which we knew all along. So the thing is, like, it's not whether or not it's good, but yes, I do think the left has to use those methods. Like, whether it's good or not, I think we should and we have to. And, like, to that point, if you think about the 2016 election, like, I think Hillary's problem was by and large a branding problem, you know?
Wait, were you done, or did we interrupt you?
No.
Yeah, I mean, let me think. Hillary's campaign as an advertising problem.
I mean, sure, because it didn't, you know, appeal to the silent majority. Like, that's the whole idea, is that yeah. She was, like, unable to, kind of because she was stuck with these old categories
right.
for how people vote, whereas, you know, Trump was thinking about new ways of how people vote. And then, of course, it seems as though the left is not thinking about how people vote at all or how to, you know, how people might be organized, which is, I think, a different question from advertising. I don't know if you think those two are similar, but I don't, Stephanie, where do you want to take this? So, I mean, the psychoanalysis point is like kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, that this stuff kind of comes from Freud. And do you think this is like, I mean, do you have questions about that?
I mean, I was just like thinking with like, you know, Hillary, like, I mean, on the one hand, it's like Aaron said, like, she's like kind of attached to like old ways of like relating to like the voting public. But at the same time, like, she kind of like conducted herself in her campaign, like, in what seems to be like an assumption that she was like relating to like, you know, like the younger, newer, like current of like thought and ideology in the U.S. Like, she like perceives like, you know, I mean, and she really just like what she was doing was like taking like all of these people's like discontents, like, you know, like with oppression and racism and police violence and like appropriating them just, like, strictly like for getting elected, and like was just kind of like being an opportunist. But like, in that sense, like, she's doing exactly what the Democrats have always done, like, just with different like social discontents, like different forms of it.
Yeah. No, if I can, sorry, I have to like keep track of what everybody's been saying because I want to like address everything. I'm going to start with what you said, Aaron, which, first of all, like, I think organizing and advertising are two completely different things. I think you can use advertising for organizing. But to your point before that about the silent majority and these old categories, I think the silent majority is an old category. And, like, there is no silent majority, you know, to, like, change a Margaret Thatcher phrase. But, like, Hillary failed to appeal to any majority is the thing, or like a whatever electorally college division majority. And that's a branding problem. And like, to your point, Stephanie, whether she was trying to do these things to like attract the youth, she failed utterly. We can just say, like, she just came off as, you know, this thing who doesn't have a personality, like this reptile, this alien, whatever you want to call it. Whereas the left, and especially the hard left or whatever you want to call it, like Bernie Sanders and like that wing, that is a potent brand. And the question is not whether it appeals to the silent majority, but whether, like Obama, it can conjure a majority, you know, a vocal majority.
So, I mean, is that what we want then? Is we just wish that like the Democrats could win? Is that like, because I mean, that seems unsatisfactory to me. I mean, does the left just want to help Hillary have better marketing?
No, not Hillary have better marketing. But yes, like, I'm a pragmatist and a realist first and foremost, and then I'm an optimist and an idealist. And I think, like, the left route to power, to like practical power in America's two-party system that's lasted for 200 years is the Democratic Party and is hijacking and co-opting it. I mean, you saw like how easy it was for Trump and his cohorts to just completely hijack the Republican Party. And I think that's very doable. Like, and in terms of incremental gains and benefits, who is going to bring that to America legislatively, practically, on an actual level? It's the Democrats, you know? Like, we have our, yeah, of course, like, we can talk, like, you know, all the shit we want about, like, you know, they're, like, identitarian tokenism and, like, you know, like, they're beholden to, like, all these capitalist interests. Okay, but it has to start somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
If you have anything in mind, just read another question off.
Okay, I think I'm just going to move on to another question, but that was, those were some, like, really interesting points. So I wanted to get back to the psychoanalysis thing. So you were talking about, like, the relationship between, like, you know, Freudian concepts and, like, I don't know, like, these sort of, like, think tank models, like, and, you know, like, in a business like advertising, like, I don't know, it's, like, interesting to think about, I guess, like, professionalizing, like, concepts of psychology, like, in order to, like, you know, optimize or, like, create, like, you know, sort of, like, just have this kind of, like, conceptual basis for, like, how, like, labor is performed, like, in a team setting, like, to produce, like, you know, generate content that, like, essentially is just, like, you know, ideology. Like, it's, like, reflecting, like, existing ideology, like, engaging with, like, public ideology in some way, shape, or form, and, like, how these, like, you know, psychoanalytic models are, like, applied to, like, you know, like, the generative processes for, like, engaging with that kind of, like, intellectual labor. I don't know. Could you, like, say more about that?
Right, but I mean, the thing is, like, what did you expect, you know? I mean, like, the point of psychology, or, like, you know, when Freud was trying to do psychology, he was running a business, a capitalist business. He was a psychoanalyst, you know? Like, people would pay him to, you know, like, talk to him and acquire some kind of, you know, benefit, some functional benefit, an improvement in their mental health from those interactions. Like, I go to a therapist. It's, and that's, like, a kind of a difficult part about therapy is thinking about it in this economic sense, you know. But so it shouldn't surprise anyone that those insights, Freud's insights, are applicable to, you know, economic fields, because they were intentionally derived, you know, with, like, the intention to provide more accurate results for his business, you know?
Hey, Alex, Will here. I want to follow up with this psychoanalysis. We were talking about the history of public relations and Edward Bernays, and I guess my question is a little broader and simpler, but if psychology is essentially looking at the individual, and we're kind of, you know, conceding that politics and psychology are related, is the issue of politics becoming about the individual, which is that a problem in your mind?
Sorry, there was, like, some feedback. Is the last thing you said, is the issue about politics becoming about the individual, is that a problem?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think totally. I mean, yeah, I think we would all agree that it is. And this is just, like, a very small side point, but maybe it relates to this a little bit, is I was just, like, noticing the way that social media and online interaction, particularly on Facebook, has changed over the years. Like, you know, since, like, I was, you know, in high school, like, 10 years ago. But I've noticed that, so, like, if we delineate or outline three modes of online interaction, which I call, like, self to public, which is just like a status update or a tweet. Then there's private person to person, so that's like a DM somebody or a message. And then there's public person to person, so that's like you're talking to somebody in public and the public is witnessing your discourse with another person. I would say the first two, broadcasting yourself and talking to somebody privately, those are still acceptable. Whereas talking to like your friend, you know, like on their wall on Facebook, like just posting on your friend's wall, that's become like kind of uncool, unpopular. So like, I don't know, getting back to what you were saying as like this public discourse and like it's withering, I think, yeah, it's a big concern.
Okay, so I wanted to move on to a point that like kind of came up when we were talking earlier this week about these topics, and like one thing that like, yeah, so I remember noticing like that we had like very different like thoughts about like the commodity form and like commodity fetish, and I wanted to just like touch up on that a bit and kind of like see if we can like relate it back to advertising. So I guess like I'll start with like maybe a prompting question, like how do you think advertisement expresses its social necessity as a function of the commodity form? And so I'll unpack that a bit by reading first like a passage from Marx. This is what I was like kind of like trying to cite or like paraphrase when we were talking. I just wanted to like read the passage to you. Okay. It's from The Fetishism of Commodities by Marx. A commodity is therefore a mysterious thing, simply because in it, the social character of men's labor appears to them as an objective character stamped upon the product of that labor. Because the relation of the producer to the sum total of their own labor is presented to them as a social relation, existing not between themselves but between the products of their labor, this is the reason why the products of their labor become commodities, social things whose qualities are at the same time perceptible and imperceptible by the senses. There is a physical relation between physical things, but it is different with commodities. There, the existence of the things qua commodities and the value relation between the products of labor, which stamps them as commodities, have absolutely no connection with their physical properties and with the material relations arising therefrom. There, it is a definite social relation between men that assumes in their eyes the fantastic form of a relationship between things.
Hello. Hey, sorry. There was also some feedback on that. I got most of it. And then after this, I kind of want to get back to Will's question because I'm not sure that I answered it entirely, but maybe he can speak to that. But if I heard the quote correctly, it was concerning how the material qualities are de-emphasized in the commodity form. I don't know. Maybe you can just clear that up real quick.
I think it's the quote says.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think what he's referring to is like not just like, you know, the physical, like, you know, this is like a physical object, like the commodities, like, you know, like a thing that you can hold and touch, but like talking about like the material like relations arising from labor, in the sense that like labor is like not just like essentially that like in the commodity, like as like the object that like our labor takes the form of, like are the social relationship, like the social character of our labor, like the way that it's like the way we participate in society, like becomes obscured, like in the object, like essentially like the social character that occurs in labor, like occurs between like the products of the labor, because that's the way that we like engage with labor, like consciously. And like the material like implications, like of the, like, I guess when he says like the physical properties and material relations arising therefrom, like he also means the condition of labor, like the condition of like, you know, working like, you know, like so many hours that like you like just to make enough money to like provide for yourself, and then like how much you're actually able to like get a return on that, like, and I think those might also be like physical like qualities of the commodity form or commodities.
And so I think the question is really about, like, how does, like, do you think that this problem of advertising and how it's coming up, and this problem that Will mentioned, actually, of the individual, of politics becoming about the individual and about, like, seeming to parrot advertising, do you think this is related to, like, the crisis of labor in society, or to, like, Marx's point about, you know, the contradiction between, like, our social relations, so, like, wage labor and private property, and the means of production, so, like, industrial production, and, like, the necessity of the dictatorship of the proletariat. Do you see these things as being related at all? I think, Stephanie, is that a good way of characterizing the question?
Totally.
Sorry, Aaron. I just want to hear what you said, like, one more time summarized, because I don't know why, but I'm getting some really bad feedback on my end.
Yeah, so for Marx, you know, I think what Stephanie's trying to outline is that there's this question of, like, the crisis of production. And for him, that necessitates, like, the dictatorship of the proletariat. And so we were wondering if you thought, and I mean, this is kind of wrapped up in the question of, like, what the commodity fetish is and why we have it. So do you think that this problem that, like, Will is outlining of, you know, politics becoming more and more about the individual and appealing to the individual via advertising, do you think this can be related to kind of these old Marxist questions about the proletariat, or do you think it outstrips them?
Ooh, that is really interesting. Shit. Yeah, my initial impulse is to say it outstrips them because, you know, like, I don't want to, you know, talk too much shit about Marx, but I don't think his analysis, like, fully accounts for everything that we're dealing with in terms of, you know, like, let's say, like, robotics and, like, the revolution of, like, the Ford production model, like, Ford 2.0 and, like, automated labor, you know, self-driving cars, like, AI, like, all of that stuff. I don't think, just because of, like, where he was placed in time, Marx had the foresight to see. So I'm a little optimistic about this, actually. And I don't think that, like, I think that the material qualities matter. Like, of course, they're like, extremely important, and they can't be left out of the analysis and, like, production, you know, like, our labor, all of that. But I think that, like, we find ways around those things in our social relationships, very old ways, like, you know, millennia old ways of being with other humans that kind of, like, try to subvert or kind of, like, wend their way around those obstacles. And I think, like, if the future in terms of automated labor, a surplus of production, kind of like where we see things going in terms of public support for universal education, a basic income, healthcare, those things, when those kind of, like, future possibilities intersect with these very old, evolutionarily, like, instilled communal traits that we see bubbling up even in our incredibly alienating society, I think when those two intersect, I'm optimistic for, like, what will occur.
So you think that, I guess, like, living in, like, post-capitalism, or, like, overcoming, like, the crisis of capitalism, and achieving, like, some sort of, like, society of social cooperation would mean, like, returning to, like, a former iteration of social cooperation? Like,
and that it could be proliferated by advertising.
Right, like, returning to, like, the communal form of, like, social existence, like, would be, first of all, how do you think, like, advertising would proliferate that? Because I was thinking earlier about the question of, like, you know, what, like, I remember you talked about, like, you know, like, you expressed discontents about the fact that, like, we don't have a true, like, commons, like, we don't have, like, a free, like, social platform that it's just, like, not funded by, like, you know, anything, like, it's just, but it has to be, like, funded by advertising. And you know, like, if we were in a post-capitalist society, like, how, like, you know, would Facebook be, like, funded? Like, would it be, like, you know, just this communal, like, everybody has, like, their shift that they do, like, in the Facebook factory, and, like, it's just, like, this, like, co-op, like, this, like, large-scale co-op, or, like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's, thanks for remembering that in this context. That is very interesting. Like, I meant to kind of talk about how the only free platforms we really have now are funded through, like, the potential of selling a product through advertising. But I don't think it entails, like, a return. Like I said, it entails an intersection between, like, the past and the future. So, like, returning, no. But, like extrapolating certain of our just, like, built-in communal qualities and then, like, seeing the like, it won't require, you know, like, this old model of socialism where everybody, you know, needs to, like, work at the factory a couple days a week to, like, produce something. Like, that's because soon most people won't have to work. You know what I mean? Like, there will be this surplus. It will stare in our faces. And then, like, there will only be a surplus as long as people are continually able to buy and consume. You know? So, like, it kind of, like, obviates the need for money, right?
Oh, yeah, no, that's, yeah, I guess, like, on this end, we were, like, sort of thinking about, like, how you keep bringing up, like, automation and, like, how that, like, what that has to do with, like, the development of, like, what we experience now as labor and, like, you know, what, how it might exist in the future.
Like, when he was talking about going through the Twitter feeds.
Right, when you were talking about, like, yeah, for example, your job, you're, like, experiencing this contradiction between the forces and relations of production, which is very much, like, a Marx point, where, like, you recognize that we live, like, in, like, a stage of capitalism high enough that, like, you shouldn't have to just sit there and, like, manually sift through, like, Twitter accounts and, like just look for, you know, patterns or, like try and, like, characterize, like, certain, you know, social trends or whatever. Like, you know, like, in a lot of ways, like, there is technology already that can do that. Like, I mean, it like, changes, like, the object that's produced by, like, you know, like between the different processes, but, like, nonetheless, like, we're moving in the direction of, like, automating, like, you know, consciousness, like, more or less, like, whatever that means for people who, like, you know, think consciousness can be automated. Anyways, back to the point. Right, so, like, you're essentially, like, you were expressing, like, a discontent with how, like, you know, you have the means to, like, not have to do the work that you're doing. Like, I mean, the means exist, like, the technology exists, yet you're doing this job that has been rendered superfluous by the development of technology. So for Marx, that would be, like, the forces of production. Like, whether it's just, like, the machines he's talking about in the factory or, like, the AI and, like, you know, like, data-driven solutions, like, stuff that we're experiencing now is, like, pretty much, like, the forces of production as well.
So how do we realize the potential not to have to work?
So how do we realize the potential to not have to work?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, the interesting thing, Stephanie, about what you were saying in terms of me not, you know, like, I shouldn't have to do my job. It's not that I shouldn't have to because, you know, robots could. It's that there's parts of it that I shouldn't have to. And I think, like, the important thing about automation to note is that AI understanding that human, you know, whatever you want to call it, that human kernel which is at the center, you know, of strategy and advertising, like, that's going to be one of the last things that AI gets to. It will get to, like, labor before it gets to understanding. Like, the last thing it gets to will be understanding our consciousness and what connects us and what, you know, brings us together in communities. So I think that's always going to be, like, it's never going to be hands-off in terms of that kind of labor. We will always need to understand ourselves and the people around us, or else it's going to be fucked, you know?
Hey, so we're going to maybe, you know, I just wanted to ask you this question because I think it's interesting. But, you know, Facebook's been in the news recently for like their algorithms. And, you know, a lot of people are claiming that they're censoring, for example, conservative ideology. And then Mark Zuckerberg will claim, well, OK, but we have to censor hate speech. So I was wondering, you know, what you thought about that, because I think that's a really interesting kind of convalescence of, you know, these companies, but then also a public platform and the public sphere.
Totally. Yeah. No, I think that's like a beautiful, beautiful irony in terms. Another really kind of interesting irony I noted recently with all that Facebook stuff is that, like, if you've been on the train recently, there's all these, you know, Facebook, we call them out of home in advertising, like out of home advertisements, you know, like billboards, train advertisements. And it's like kind of just ironic that this, you know, this social media corporation who's made its fortune off of advertising on the internet has to resort to like concrete in-person advertisements to like assure its customer base of its trustworthiness. I don't know. I think that's pretty funny.
Oh, interesting. Do you think there's like a relationship between like those IRL like billboard train stop ads?
IRL means in real life for our listeners not up to date with the kids' internet lingo.
Right. Sorry. Okay. Do you think that there is a relationship between those ads recently popping up on the streets and public areas and the congressional hearing that happened recently? Because that was like right, like those popped up right when the congressional hearing happened, I think.
Yes, for our listeners, IRL does mean in real life, and then URL means something about the internet. But of course, there's a correlation between those two things. Yeah, like the billboards were directly a product of that scandal and of that hearing. And like, I don't know. It's very interesting to see how these corporations are going to straddle that fence. Right, that Aaron was talking about like, you know, being this supposedly public forum, and then on the other hand, you know, like having to be the platform for these really evil, like disgusting voices, and also like how brands are going to straddle this line. Like, I know I'll be, you know, looking through the feed of, you know, people I'm supposed to interact with that mention my brand, and I'm supposed to, you know, be engaging with these people and being like, you know, oh yeah, like we love you, like, you know, like thanks for loving our brand. And some of these people will have 10,000 followers on Twitter, and I go to click on that, their profile, and it's like, you know, like Trump, like fucking liberals, like Hillary for prison, and all of this shit. And then it's like, as a, you know, as like a socialist, am I supposed to just, you know, ignore them? Or as a community manager on this brand, do I have to interact with them because that's who our customers are? Is that are those our old customers who we're trying to reassure, like the boomers that are our current customer base? Or should I ignore them because we're trying to like bring in more and more millennials to continue the future of the business, you know?
Well, and, you know, the kind of the way that you put it there seemed almost like a bit of a question of, like, economics. Like, do I need to, in the long run, maybe it's better if I go with this cultural current than the other one. And I guess I have a question is, do you think that there is a social duty for these platforms to censor, you know, what you've referred to as kind of evil ideologies? I mean, I myself am somewhat suspicious of it because I don't know that it, you know, really... just because these things are censored doesn't mean they're not there. Do you think that anything's accomplished when these things are censored? Does that help us accomplish something in society? I just kind of want to know your opinion on the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty conflicted about that too. Like, personally, what I adhere to, I would like them to not be censored. And just be dealt with you know, public discourse, like, be completely invalidated, kind of like how we, not to, like, give any credit to CNN, but, like, if you were watching CNN yesterday, they kind of, like, did a whole thing about, like, Alex Jones and, like, the Sandy Hook shooting that he called a conspiracy. And, like, when, you know, like, I've heard stuff about Alex Jones calling it a conspiracy before, but when you, like, see it on CNN on national television and they have, like, a clip of him saying, like, you know, these children who died were, like, actors or whatever, it really kind of, like, you know, puts it in perspective and it's like, oh, shit, wait, like, what, you know, like, kind of like, how could you say that? And so part of me is against censorship because it's, like, things like that. Like, I think those are kind of what those past communal strategies of being human is what I'm talking about, like, public shaming even, you know, like, why don't we, like, we need to bring back public shaming and more of, like, a kind of, like, healthy, you know, like, extent, like, the scaffolds or what do you call those things where, like, it's two people's hands and, like, their heads locked up. But, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, thanks for that, Alex. I think we're going to wrap up with our last question since it's almost time. I guess we just to summarize, we were all wondering, like, going forward, like, you know, because we kind of started out with you talking about, like, you know, what it, like, means for you to, like, you know, engage with this, like, type of work as a socialist. Going forward, how do you think that, like, your activity, like, you know, as an advertising account manager and, like, socialists, which are, you know, obviously two different spheres in your life, but, like, how do you think that, like, your insights in, like, marketing might, like, be, like, carried across to, like, your activity as a socialist?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, I'm still trying to figure that out myself. It's like the obvious thing on the face of it comes back to the question of, like, accelerationism and whether that's a good idea or not. I'm like, I don't have a good answer to that. I feel like it's probably not, but right now it's almost purely an economic thing because it's like, you know, to learn all of, not to learn, but like the place I learned all of this Marxist, you know, theory and like where I could say I became a socialist left me $30,000 in debt, you know, like art school. So it's like right now it's just like, you know, I don't feel bad that I'm working for the man to pay the man back, kind of in a way. And then, like, in the future, obviously right now I'm just learning a lot of useful strategies for kind of, like, building communities, getting people riled up. How do you get them, you know, to buy into something? And, like, whether that's for a brand or whether that's for, you know, an activist organization or a protest, like, I feel like the possibilities are multiple. So, yeah, it's just, I think I need to be, give it a little time and kind of be in that mindset because right now I'm really not active at all in terms of kind of like social engagement.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us on the show today, Alex. That was like really interesting. And yeah, we hope to have you on the back on the show anytime if you want. All right. Talk to you later.
I would totally want to. It was great talking to you guys. I had a great time. Thanks for being unnecessarily interested in me for what I feel like how interesting I am. Now I'm going to get back to advertising.
Wonderful.
See you.
Later.
This has been Radical Minds on WHPK 88.5 FM Chicago. Catch us every Thursday at 2 p.m. for more.